This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Brian Naylor in Washington, sitting in for Neil Conan. In a little over 3 months, the U.S. is scheduled to transfer power to an interim Iraqi government. But on the day that the U.S. Administrator Paul Bremer marked the 100-day countdown, there was a rocket attack on a Baghdad hotel and a mortar attack on the U.S. compound in the city. In the latest issue of The New Yorker magazine, John Lee Anderson writes about the dangers of Baghdad after a year after the war. As you may remember, John Lee Anderson spoke with us several times during the war about his letters from Baghdad. We're pleased to have him back on the program. He's with us on the phone from his hotel in Baghdad. Thank you very much, John.
Well, thanks for having me back on. Nice to be here.
You've been in Baghdad now for some 3 weeks and write that it's a much more dangerous place than it was a year ago. Tell us what you've been seeing.
Yes, it certainly is. When I say a year ago, of course, I mean before the war that began last March 19th, 2003. It was fairly hairy here during the war, but since the Americans arrived in Baghdad in April of last year, the security here has gotten progressively worse. I spent several weeks after the fall of the city last year. I returned for much of last summer. I was here in November, December, and I've been back since the beginning of March. And I have to say my sense of disquiet only grows with the passing months, despite the positive determinism of the coalition provisional authority about the imminent arrival of democracy to Iraq. I don't see it reflected in the perceptions of the Iraqis I know, and certainly as a Westerner here, it's become extremely dangerous. I was woken this morning just before dawn by rockets hitting the hotel next door, the Sheraton. That's not the first time that's happened. In November, rockets hit both of these hotels. Fortunately, no one was killed. But also in the time I've been here, a sort of new threshold seems to be obtaining, and that is that Westerners and people who work for them are now targets very clearly, not just the men in uniforms or Iraqi police, but American, Dutch, German, British civilian. There's been, by my count, 10 assassinations of civilians working in one or another capacity in the country, driving around the country. Some appear to have been opportunistic killings, but others, they were trailed and ambushed. In one case, at least, by men who were on the U.S. payroll as part of the new Iraqi police force, one of the most troubling of the assassinations. And a week ago, a little more than a week ago, there was a huge car bomb, or a suicide bomb, it doesn't seem to be clear yet, at a hotel about 5 blocks away from here, a small hotel, like many here in Baghdad, where an assortment of Iraqis, Turkish, Arab, and the odd Western journalist or businessman was staying. That killed, nobody seems to know exactly how many people, but it included a British businessman, and it was followed by a number of rocket attacks on other small hotels. So over the last week, what we've seen is a kind of exodus from all of these smaller hotels into a series of, you could call them green zones, kind of replicating the former Saddam Palace, which is now surrounded by blast walls and occupied by the coalition on the other bank of the Tigris. And there is another agglomeration of hotels and Westerners inside blast walls on this side, protected by dog sniffing dogs and tanks and soldiers and police. And there's a couple of others forming elsewhere. In fact, just today, a translator for an American magazine was ambushed, and he seems like he will probably die during the night. So it's pretty dismal, and it's becoming a matter of concern to everyone who's working here. And it poses, I think, serious questions about the future of any kind of reconstruction effort in this country, not to mention news coverage.
I'd just like to take a moment to invite our listeners to call if you have questions about life in Baghdad a year after the war. Give us a call at 800-989-8255. That's 1-800-989-TALK. We're speaking with John Lee Anderson, staff writer for The New Yorker. Who is it that's behind these outbreaks of violence?
It's not clear, as it has never been clear. But whoever is doing it, I would rephrase it. I don't think it's outbreaks. It certainly seems to me to be part of a definite pattern. I mean, really, since the beginning of the occupation, when the violence first began, it struck me that where it began and when it began, which was in late April, in Fallujah, a town west of here, a traditional Saddam, pro-Saddam town in the Sunni Triangle, a very tribal, clan-based area, that it was very intriguing that once it began, every day afterwards, there were more and more and more attacks. That may well have been linked, and seems to largely have been linked, to the residual Saddam resistance, but what was most unsettling about it was that it was obvious that the people attacking had studied very carefully the newly arrived Americans' patterns of behavior, the way they moved around, and then they had decided to strike. And in all of the violence that has occurred in the country since then, of which there's several types, these suicide bombings, which people, and arguably it could be right that they are from Islamist extremists, some of whom entered the country during the war while we were here last year, in fact, even stayed in this hotel, and then escaped a few hours before the Americans arrived. The suicide bombings would appear to be people from outside Iraq. It doesn't appear to be part of an Iraqi tradition, this idea of martyrdom operations, but that, of course, can change. And then there are the others, the opportunistic assassinations, cars coming alongside and spraying with Kalashnikov, the bombs thrown into hotels, or the car bombs. There's a variety of people here in this country who have reasons not to want the Americans here and to want this project to fail, who have an ideological construct about what this is all about and have continued to study the statements made, the actions taken by the Bush administration, by Paul Bremer and the coalition authority here, and the way the Americans have behaved and altered their plans in the country and shifted their own actions accordingly. And we seem to be in a new threshold, a new sort of period that's evolving. And by my analysis, this is to essentially clear the decks in the country of anyone linked to the occupation or from the outside, Westerners. And the effect of that is to herd everyone inside these various islands of securities behind blast wall, making it virtually impossible to move around or do anything without heavy security. I think there's a political goal in this, and that is, as we know, and as you pointed out in your introduction, there is going to be a handover to the Iraqi Governing Council this summer. The Coalition Provisional Authority is going to change its name to the embassy. Some are going to leave. They will stay inside their green zone there, Saddam's palace. That will be the new U.S. embassy base, evidently. And the American troops, who have been gradually pulling back from patrols in the cities, will fall back into six or so bases in the country. And their tenure here is not legitimated by a status of forces agreement, because the Iraqis refused to do that without an elected body. But I think the American argument is that they are mandated by the UN to be here, and they are invested in restoring Iraq to democracy and many of the projects, these many billions of dollars they plan to pour into the country. Well, if security is so bad that on the one hand you have American troops inside bases and virtually every other Westerner inside their own kinds of bases, and finding it extremely difficult to actually do anything, it becomes a self-defeating enterprise, I think, and that is what the people who are doing these actions want to achieve, to make the very idea of a Western presence here untenable and force them to leave.
John, let me just interrupt you for a moment to remind our listeners you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's take a call now. Ken is on the line from Blanchardville, Wisconsin. Ken, thanks for joining us on Talk of the Nation.
Well, good day to you, gentlemen. And, boy, I sure appreciate your guest's perspective. You talk about the ideological construct of, my assumption was, the Iraqi people in this situation. And my question to you, I'd love to get your opinion on this, is there any illusion amongst the Iraqi people that the U.S. premise for being there, of course, is this great ideological premise of freedom and democracy and all that, but my feeling is, and the impression I get, is the Iraqi people feel that we're there for corporate purposes to get their oil, where we may be pouring billions of dollars into the Iraqi economy, but the point of that is to reap billions of dollars from the Iraqi economy.
Okay, John, let me ask you, is there a sense among the Iraqi people that the U.S. are there for economic purposes, to take their oil?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that is, you know, for 30 years, Saddam, this country was a witch's brew in which Saddam was able to stir the pot himself, and historically, the U.S. did not comport itself with the utmost straightforwardness or decency in Iraq, standing by him during the 80s, during the slaughter of the Kurds, helping him during the war with Iran, apparently giving him the green light. This is, again, from the Iraqi's perspective, but also quite factual. Apparently, whether cross signals or what, but not noticing that he was going to invade Iraq, and then, of course, turning the tables on him and invading, putting the country under sanctions for years, but leaving him in power. The Iraqi people are understandably, having been isolated and with only Saddam to tell them their truth for many years, quite confused about what the Americans are doing here. He always told them it was the Americans and the British would eventually come, as they always had, because of Iraq's oil, because of its geostrategic position in the Middle East, and for the purpose of helping Israel, that is, to remove the country which was most aggressive towards Israel from the area. And you know, statements made by people within the Bush administration have enhanced that perception rather than deterred it. And the insecurity here on the ground, the inability of the Americans to provide security, yes, they've turned the lights back on, yes, they've switched on water, and there is a great deal of goodwill among some of the people that are here, but the Americans have never, quite extraordinarily, considering the power of our media and a PR machine in the United States, they've never been able to simplify their message and explain in a way that convinces a majority of Iraqis that they are here for altruistic reasons. I don't think any Iraqi that I've met believes that. There is a deep-rooted cynicism in this country.
Oh, I want to ask you a question posed to us from a caller, and one that I'm curious about as well. Because you touch on it in your piece this week, how has life improved for Iraqis since the fall of Saddam? Obviously, there's a lot of violence going on, but things have changed somewhat, I think, for ordinary Iraqis.
You know, in some ways, I compare. I don't know if there's any listeners or yourself who lived in New York in the late 1980s or the very early 90s, when crack seemed to have taken over parts of the city, and there was violence everywhere, particularly in certain areas, say in Brooklyn and others, and they became no-go zones for the police. That's kind of what Baghdad has become like, in a way, the whole country. You know, you could have a nice apartment and a TV and all those things and electricity, but you had to really worry about yourself, your daughter, your children, your wife, if you had to go to and from the subway exit. And it was a source of great consternation and fear for your everyday life. That's kind of the situation Iraq is in. The greatest thing that the invasion achieved, as we all know, was the toppling of Saddam Hussein, who now is finally a prisoner. But in a sense, it's been a hypothetical emancipation. There has been no moment of national catharsis.
All right, John, and I'm very sorry, but we're out of time. Thanks very much for joining us. John Lee Anderson's Postcard from Baghdad is in the New Yorker this week. He spoke to us from Baghdad.